Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on this episode of Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie.
I am Bernie, and I am in Scranton, Pennsylvania, with Dan.
And I'm in Stockholm, Sweden.
And we are the fans of history. We are in the 550s BC. And we are going to talk about this episode about Greece. But before we get started, I do have a review from a listener. If you guys want to hear it, you want to hear that, Dan?
Of course.
Okay. This comes from the name, code name, Jeff Galella, from 9/23/2023, titled, "I like to learn, but man, do I hate being taught. I've only just discovered this podcast, and for want of more, I have ripped through their entire catalog in short order. I look forward to every new podcast, even if coworkers, friends, and 12-year-old sons dread me repeating what I just learned right back into their dumb faces." 5 stars. How about that? Well, thank you, Jeff Galella.
Thank you.
Yeah. Before we get going, too, I just want to do a little... This, we are recording this at the end of October 2023. I would like to do a shout-out to Gil from a podcast of biblical proportions. Gil is from Israel, and he actually left Israel at the end of September because of the other events that were going on, but he was not there during the horrific events that happened, but his family was. He and his family are not in Israel, but it is a really tough situation for them. It's a tough situation all around, but if you check out his podcast, a podcast of biblical proportions, that would definitely help him out, and I think you guys will enjoy it too. It's a really good podcast. And if you can get an update on, you know, what's going on there too, he's doing some updates there now. So I'll put a link for it in the show notes. Okay. I'm going to quote something from one of my favorite ancient history books. "These are the researches of Herodotus of Halicarnassus, which he publishes in the hope of thereby preserving from decay the remembrance of what men have done and of preventing the great and wonderful actions of the Greeks and the barbarians from losing their due meed of glory, and withal to put on record what were the grounds of their feuds."
Epic.
Epic, right?
Wow.
So begins his story. And we're kind of at the place where we're sort of mirroring Herodotus, and we're ramping up to this great clash of cultures, which is really the theme of his book, East versus West, Europe versus Asia. We're barreling now towards some major events in world history. Actually, we're like in the middle of it. So Herodotus is, when he says that, he wants to talk about the feud between Asia and Europe and the, you know, the Greeks and barbarians. He's talking about the Greek-Persian wars, the late 400s BC. So we're now in the 550s BC, and if anybody else listens to history podcasts like Dan Carlin or stuff, you know, you kind of got to go back to set the story. You know, you just jump right into the Persian wars. You kind of miss this background, and we're in it really right now.
We're actually going to do a long study on the background to the Persian Wars. This will be like 40 episodes of build-up.
You know, you're right. You're absolutely right.
So if you really want to understand the background, listen to Fan of History.
Yes, if you really want to understand the background of the Persian Wars, and that's the launching pad of ancient history, because what happens from there, you know, I don't think it's a secret or a spoiler to say the major events of world history, you know, of ancient history, you have the Persian Wars, and you have the Peloponnesian Wars, And then eventually you get Alexander the Great and moving into the sort of modern world over a great period of time. But yeah, it's a good point, Dan. We will be a long background to the Persian Wars.
And 1,000 years of the Roman Empire.
That's right. This will be the future of Fan of History over the next decades of the story and years of us telling it, I would say, right?
Oh, yes.
For sure. So, like, right now where we are is we've talked about Cyrus the Great. I mean, that's a huge earthquake in the east. You know, we're talking about the east versus west. So this huge earthquake is happening in the east. For centuries, we talked about the Assyrians and the Babylonians and cultures that were in what's today modern-day Turkey, which is, you know, now is Lydia, but there was all kind of different cultures there. The cultures from Iran, which are where the Persians are. So all these cultures were sort of separate together. And what we see now is a conqueror and a different way of conquering, you know. And she's not like the ancient conquerors where they just conquered everything and killed everybody. We have Cyrus the Great. It's a new thing.
Well, and also the greatest conqueror the world has seen to this point.
Absolutely. And sometimes he didn't even have to conquer. People kind of wanted to join his empire. He didn't have to be as brutal as the old other conquerors. So it's definitely a new way.
And that's what makes him great.
That is what makes him great. We have the rise of Athens and democracy, which is a big focus of history. Then we also have the rise of Sparta, which is not a democracy. And these forces are about to crash into each other and sort themselves out over the next decades and in about 100 years, too. I feel like, you know, this. If you see what your kids are studying in history, or when you remember when you studied it, I mean, kind of like ancient history always started off around the Persian Wars. And this is where we're, you know, moving into it, like I said, the background. And of course, there's this up-and-coming civilization in the Italian peninsula called Rome.
But that makes you imagine what would have happened if the Greeks had lost. And we would be talking about, the things the ancient Persians did.
Absolutely.
Our entire worldview would be different.
I agree. I mean, if you were to change that, and boy, was it a... I mean, we're not going to get there quite a few episodes, but man, they were on a razor's edge there. It was quite an upset, let's put it that way.
I can't wait to get to Thermopylae and the 300 Spartans.
Go Sparta. So yeah, if you wanted to start the podcast around here in the 550s, you would be okay. I think, you know, it's different. It's a little different now than it was way back when we were doing it back in the day.
And this is the transitional time between the Archaic period and the ancient period.
Yes.
In Greek history.
Right, technically, like a person doesn't say, like, I'm living in the Archaic period now, and, oh, good, we just moved into the Classical period. But yeah, we're in that middle time there, exactly. Have you heard about the TikTok thing with the Roman Empire?
Yes, I have.
It's amazing.
Yeah, girls keep asking me how often I think about the Roman Empire, and I don't like the 10-hour answer.
10 hours a day, is that your answer?
No, the answer is 10 hours long. I always think about the Roman Empire.
Oh, yeah, the answer is 10 hours long. When my daughter asked me, my 15-year-old daughter, and I said, yes, I do. And I also think about the Roman Republic.
And the Roman Kingdom.
About the Roman Kingdom here, guys. So we got all the background stories. I feel like it's like a video game. We've said it before, but it really is. Maybe even the Sid Meier civilization's modeled after all this, because we've had all this colonization going on for all this time. All these, you know, the colonies are getting set up. And then you're kind of finding a new civilization, you know. Ashurbanipal in Assyria never heard of Gyges, who came from, you know, Turkey. But now you kind of know where all the cities are. You kind of know where all the civilizations are. And it's like, game on, let's play.
In a sense, we are back in 1250 BC. That is, we have now finally recovered from the Bronze Age collapse.
Yes.
To reveal the new map, which turned out to be quite similar to the old.
That's exactly right. Hey, if there's any developers out there and you want to make a Fan of History game, you know, we'll be your advisors. So, like I said, we're kind of mirroring Herodotus. And it's so coincidental. Maybe I'm just asking questions, but maybe it's a conspiracy. Because guess who guess who Herodotus basically starts his story out with?
No, some Assyrian.
Gyges.
Oh.
And Gyges was one of the first episodes I ever did with Dan.
Yeah, that's where you started out.
Yeah, exactly. The first episode I ever started with in the podcast with Dan, that was actually, I ever hear, episode 89, named King Gyges. And that's basically where Herodotus, that's his first history, before he starts out with a little mythology. So, and then, I'm not going to do a spoiler why, but in the next decade in this area of the world, when we talk about Greece and Lydia and such, we're going to say why that he started with Gyges.
Okay.
All right. So like we said, we're in Greece. And when we do Greece, we talk about the Olympics. And the Olympics started in 776 BC. So these games, we talk about change of history, but these games are like a thread that runs all the way through ancient history, all the way up into the 300s AD. So kind of like your connection to the past and into the future, these games, you had to be Greek to be in them, but they lasted a long time. And we don't have too many winners this time, so we could kind of blow through these. We only have two. We have 556 BC. We have Phaedros, who is from Pharsalos, which is a city in southern Thessaly. And that's all we have for the 556 BC Olympics. And then the 57th Olympics, which is 552 BC, we also have the Stadion. The Stadion is the most important thing to win for them in the Olympics, which was basically just a foot race, a sprint. And winner's name from 552 BC was Laodromos, and he was from Sparta.
Go Sparta.
Go Sparta. All right, you want to get into this now?
Oh, yes.
All right, here we go. Okay. So 558 BC, Solon dies. Solon was one of the first lawgivers. He was a nice lawgiver of Athens. He was, I'll just quickly sum him up. He was, before him, there was this guy named Draco. Possibly, how about this, Dan? I learned that Draco might not be a real person. Draco might be a metaphor because Draco means snake. And where the laws were, there was snake pictures on them. Like, because one of Athens's spirit animals, you could say, was the snake. So Draco meaning snake, that may be just, they just used that name, you know, could have been something they said. May not have been a real person.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, right? Like Draco from Harry Potter.
Yes, Draco Malfoy.
Right. So Draco means snake, and draconian laws comes from Draco. The laws were very, very harsh. You could be, you know, killed. You could be put to death for stealing a cabbage. So this was, the lower classes were really struggling. This is back in the 600s. They were struggling. They needed somebody to just fix these problems that they had. They were taking all their wealth, making them slaves if they couldn't pay their bills. So this Solon guy comes along, very wise. Herodotus speaks about him in detail. And he comes up with all these different rules to make sure that you can't, you know, slavery for all these things. He canceled debts, et cetera, et cetera. Then he left town and to try to make his rules last. But it really, it helped, but it kind of like opened the door to like people saying like, well, now we want more democracy. And they just sort of, it's sort of like the U.S. situation today became very gridlocked, and it became very difficult for on Greece. We have this guy, Pisistratus. He's very important right now. He's going to be important in Greece for a long time. We're going to talk about him almost as much as we talk about Cyrus.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you remember him?
Yes.
Right. So what he sees, right now he's in power because he sees the Acropolis by saying that he was attacked by some people and that he needs bodyguards. So then he used his bodyguards to take over the Acropolis.
Okay, so he's the tyrant of Athens now.
Right. Just for a little while this time. And he is probably related to Solon. He may be his nephew or his cousin, something along those lines. And it also found out that him and Solon were probably lovers, as the Greeks, you know, the older man would take a younger lover.
Yeah.
Probably Pisistratus was Solon's young lover when he was young. And Solon doesn't really like, didn't like, because we know he's dead now. He didn't like this business with Pisistratus taking over. And he stood in his armor every day saying, get rid of Pisistratus. So now Solon is dead. Pisistratus is the tyrant of Athens. So at this time, there's three main families that are, you know, aristocratic families that are in charge of Athens. There's the Pisistratids, which is Pisistratus. There's Philades and the Alcmaonids. It would be like the Alcmaonidae is how you would say it in Greek. And I'll try not to constantly try to destroy these words. We don't always have to need them. Think about the what they would do in ancient Greece is these aristocratic families and where they gathered their, where they gained their power and their support were still connected to the old days. They would say that they were descended from one of these mythical heroes of the Iliad and the Odyssey, you know, of the Trojan War. So apparently the Pisistratids, they were from the Mycenaean Bronze Age city of Pylos in Messenia, and they traced their ancestry to the king of Pylos. His name was Neleus, whose son Nestor was fought in the Trojan War. So that's Pisistratids. There's three classes of people right now in Athens, three like political classes, but they're also like economic classes, and they're somewhat geographically located. And this is a podcast. I don't need to destroy the names, so I'll just tell you the English versions of them. There are the people of the plains, and they are led by a guy called Lycurgus. These were landowners that produced grain, and then there was a food shortage, if you recall, previously, and actually Pisistratus had, being a general, he helped relieve that because there was a blockade of Athens. So the people of the plains were like the large landowners that owned farms and things like this. Next population is called the people of the coast. And they were probably led by Lycurgus too, but they also could have been led by this guy called Megacles, an Alcmaonid. I found both in my research. I'll talk a little bit of more after why we're not. I'm not sure. Then the last group is sort of a new group, and they are called the Hypercacroi. Like I said, I wouldn't try to pronounce them, but I did. But they were the hill dwellers. They lived in the hills, and these were the poorest of the Athenian population. The only production they had was barter items like honey and wool. But Pisistratus, being the populist that he is and was, he organized them into a third faction, the hill dwellers. And this party outnumbered the other two parties combined.
Why are so many people living in the hills?
It's like I say, it could be, well, these are like your poorer people. So let's say you lived in the plains, but you probably had no political power because you worked for those landowners, right? So they owned all these big farms. And the people on the coast, they're sort of like the middle people. They're like middle class. There would be like people who maybe even live in this, who do like little factories, little, what do you call that? Cottage and merchants, things like that. And the people in the hills, they might have actually lived in the city, but they just call them that. So they would live in the hills. They would be basically people that don't have like aren't a landed aristocracy. They don't really have a lot of any kind of wealth or political power. They even say they were like, they could have been like recent immigrants that didn't want to lose their citizenship, which is interesting. I didn't realize that, you know, you could become a citizen as a foreigner, but that could have been a new thing too. But these basically were the lower class. You could say like the people of the plains were the upper class, people of the coast were the middle class, and there was not as many middle classes we have, you know, in today's society, and then the hills were the lower class. Got that?
Got it.
Okay, good. I'm going to go back just a little bit again because it's important. Remember this guy, Cylon, spelled like Cylon, C-Y-L-O-N?
Yeah, from the 7th century BC, right?
Yeah, right, around the 630s. This guy, he tried to he was one of the first ones to try to overthrow the government. He tried to, he was an Olympic athlete, and he tried to overthrow the government, but he didn't work out for him, and all his supporters, they tried to hide in the temple of Athena, because if you hide in a temple, you're not allowed to harm them. The Alcmaeonids, they tricked them to come out, and then they killed them all, which you're not supposed to do, because that's like a sacrilege. So it took like 30 years of before they went to court and did all these things about it, but because you're not supposed to do that and it's a sacrilege, it's like they felt that they're cursed and they were kicked out of the city. So around 600 BC, the Alcmaeonids are sentenced to exile and perpetuality.
Perpetuity.
Perpetuity. That sounds like a Mike Tyson word. Perpetuality.
I get to correct you in English. That's the first time
I know. I don't know about that. You should see how this guy could pronounce Egyptian words, too, let me tell you. These guys were a cursed family, but they're still very powerful. And so what they say is, like, even from there, they cast a long and glamorous shadow. It almost made them, like, more powerful in a way, even though they were in the city. They were like just this menacing, cursed group of, you know, wealthy, wealthy people. So while they were out, some interesting things they did. Like they got into an arrangement with the priest at Delphi. And do you remember the first sacred war when there was a city of Crissa that was sort of, they were attacking the pilgrims going to Delphi. And so they had this massive war and they destroyed the other city.
Yep.
That was an Alcmaeon. That was one of those guys that was, his name was actually Alcmaeon. So that he was an ancestor of Megacles. And they destroyed that whole city. They poisoned it with hellebore. The whole town got diarrhea. It's episode 157 in the 590s BC, the first sacred war. We cover that. The thing is, like, they're still powerful. And now they got in with the priests of Delphi. They were also, while he was gone, he became a middleman between the Oracle of Delphi and Croesus, the richest man in the world. And Herodotus tells us this great story about this patriarch of the Alcmaeonid clan. Croesus said, he was so pleased with him, he said, you could come visit my royal treasury in Sardis, and you could take away all the gold you can carry with you. So Herodotus says, He went into it wearing a baggy woman's tunic and the loosest boots he could find, filled everything with gold dust, so that, quote, when he came staggering out, he could scarcely drag one foot after the other. His tunic bulged obscenely, and even his cheeks were stuffed full to bursting.
That's terrible.
Right? So this is some rich, money-grubbing guy here. There's a reason I'm telling you all this, because these people are all going to be like working together and fighting each other for the next couple decades. So like I said, Pisistratus is the tyrant of Athens. And Herodotus says, quote, he acquired the sovereignty of Athens, which he continued to hold without disturbing the previously existing offices or altering any of the laws. So that means to me, like, if you were going to take over the United States, you'd be the president of the United States, but you don't act like a king. You still have to go through the Congress and do all those things. But basically then what you would do is put your own people in the Congress, put your own people as the judges, sort of do it like that. We'll see in the end that Pisistratus as a tyrant he's not considered a bad guy, that he kind of did good for democracy and for Athens. Maybe he's an in-between character. But so, anyway, he is sort of like first citizen, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's where it gets a little interesting, too. So now he's in, but he's going to be kicked out again. Because, remember Lycurgus, he's the guy who's in charge of the people of the plain, and possibly also the people of the coast, and the Alcmaeonides are out of town. Well, this Lycurgus brings them back. He says, I'm going to bring them back to get this guy out of town. So the leader of the Alcmaeonid clan, his name is Megacles. He sounds like a transformer, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Megacles, activate.
Wait, wouldn't that be cool? Like a transformer that's like made out of wood. Like he could turn into a trireme. Oh, that's amazing.
Maybe he could turn into a Trojan horse.
Yeah, like a Trojan horse and stuff. That is amazing. I just thought of that. So anyway, they bring Megacles, comes back because they Lycurgus didn't feel he was powerful enough to get rid of Pisistratus. So Pisistratus, seeing the writing on the wall, he sort of just got out of town. They didn't attack him. There wasn't any violence as far as I found. He just, you know, realized he wasn't strong enough to go. Pisistratus is pretty smart. So he leaves town.
Peace out.
But this is number one, Pisistratus out. Pisistratus was in once. Pisistratus was out once. We're still in the 550s, and he's going to come back right now because these two factions started quarreling already. So Megacles, who's now back in town, he got tired of this quarreling, and he figures, well, I'll just go with Pisistratus. We'll just bring him back. So he sends a herald out to bring him back, and he offered to reestablish him as, you know, the tyrant, but he has to marry his daughter. He has to marry Megacles' daughter. Pisistratus was already married to somebody, and so he divorces her. He already had two sons as well, and he marries Megacles' daughter. And then they came up with this really insane plan to come back. Do you ever hear this story?
I think I did, actually, but tell us.
I'm going to tell you. All right. So they go and they find this tall, attractive woman, over 2 meters tall, over 6 feet. And she's apparently very beautiful and everything. And they dress her like Athena. They put on a helmet and armor like the goddess Athena. They put her in a chariot. And they have these heralds who are going to advance, you know, that she's coming. The goddess is coming to lead her favorite person to the Acropolis. And so they, right?
And this works?
Apparently it works. It's funny because Herodotus says he's surprised that this worked because he just thinks the Athenians were smarter than that. I hate to say it, but it just seems to me like the Trump phenomena.
Yeah, actually, they were probably tired of the quarreling too, and was okay. Now Pisistratus is back. Let's just go back to him. But I've seen women who were 6 feet, but I haven't met a woman who was 2 meters. So I say six feet 7 inches is about 2 meters.
Oh, see, I'm sorry. I always can think of it. As a meter, as 3 feet.
You're an American, so you are forgiven.
Yes, I thank you. Sorry. She's almost 2 meters.
Yeah.
She's pretty tall. Maybe she's like 6'2". Let's say that. She's a pretty tall lady. I also think maybe the way I said the Trump phenomena too, though, like the hill people. You know, I mean, let's say there's a lot of people who like Trump that are not hill people. But, you know, he has a big faction of people, right, who are just not super sophisticated. Right? I know there's a lot of sophisticated people who are Trump supporters, and he's probably out there. But there's a lot of unsophisticated people who don't, you know, and they could, you know, you could hold the Bible upside down in front of a thing and say, hey, I'm a Bible thumper. You know, that kind of stuff.
But imagine the problems they had in Athens here. If the people of the plains and the people of the coast couldn't agree on things, and then they had this huge mass of people of the hills who didn't agree with anything. So it's a mess. Megacles gets the idea to get Pisistratus back into action. And at that point, I think everybody supports it.
For a little bit.
Yeah.
Remember, I said that was number one. He's let's say, here's what happens now.
He's back in power again, so this is power number two for Pisistratus.
Power number two. He could have been sent out in possibly 559 or possibly 556, not sure, but we're right around now, around 556, 555, when he did that stunt with the tall woman, and he's back in power. And he's married. Remember, he's married to Megacles' daughter. But Herodotus tells, here's where the problem starts. Herodotus tells us that he didn't want to have children with her because he already had two sons. And remember, her father was under the curse. So there was another reason he didn't want to have any children that are under a curse. So he had sex with her in an unnatural way.
Oh, jeez.
This is a family show, so we're not going to get into specifics, but there's probably a couple of scenarios you guys may be able to think of that with having sex in an unnatural way.
Yes. And we're not going to kink shame anyone who is interested in having sex in an unnatural way.
Definitely, we're not kink shaming anyone on this hot podcast.
Especially not Pisistratus.
Especially, no, we're not going to piss off Pisistratus. So good old Pisistratus was, okay. So anyway, this was like a scandal. I mean, in Athens, like, this is like, today we don't seem to have scandals anymore, but this was a huge, huge scandal. I mean, this is a, you know, a aristocratic woman and you're, what kind of business are you up to? So Pisistratus, again, seeing the writing on the wall, yeah, which is, by the way, that's an expression we're going to talk about next decade in Babylonia.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So Pisistratus, seeing the writing on the wall, left town. This is so he left again. This is number two. He left town. He went to Eritrea. And Herodotus says there he had a meeting with his two sons. He must have been kind of young at this time, but people got started young in those days. And Herodotus tells us it was the opinion of his son Hippias, and these guys are going to be important later, Hippias, that prevailed, and that they should try to restore his power in Athens. They're not giving up. So first step is to make some money, make some moolah. They're out of town. They begin to collect large sums of money with cities that were, quote, under obligations to them. I'm not really 100% sure what obligations they have. You know, there's tons of Game of Thrones politics going on around here now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently the Thebans gave them the most money at the time. And I know they also got involved in mining to make some money. So they're gone for the rest of the 550s, but they're out really making some money and making friends.
So Pisistratus is out for the second time.
Mm-hmm. He's out for the second time. He's not down for the count yet, though.
Oh, he's counting a lot of money, though.
Yeah, he is counting a lot of money. So it would be like, yeah, we have Trump out once, and he's, you know, maybe he's only coming back for his second time. I don't know. It's not.
So this is like Trump in 2034 or 2036.
Something like that.
But Pisistratus is a lot younger than Trump.
Yes, thank God. This shows you, though, how things go in history. This really does show you. Okay, so we're done with Pisistratus, but we are not done with Greece. Because, like I say, there's a lot of stuff happening. We keep going?
Yeah.
All right. So in between, we're going to talk about Sparta, but in between, we're going to do a little in between. There's kind of a colony, sort of a Athens sort of makes a colony. So what happens is there's a tribe from Thrace. And they suffered some military defeats against their rivals in the area, in Thrace. And they traveled to the Oracle of Delphi to get advice. And they were told to return to Thrace with a Greek colonist as their commander. Delphi is like to the northwest of Athens, or south. It's to the west of Athens anyway. And so on their way back to Thrace, apparently they, you know, stopped in Athens, and they met this guy called Miltiades, let's call him, because he showed them some hospitality. He is the leader of these colonies out there. So what it says, what we learn, what historians say is he accepted the offer, but his motivations are kind of ambiguous. The traditional view was that he was not happy with Pisistratus, so he wanted to go make his fortune somewhere else. But other historians say that he was actually part of Pisistratus's foreign policy, and he wanted to exert some influence in the region. So Pisistratus maybe sent his guy out there. He arrived in Thrace with a group of settlers somewhere probably between 556 and 550 BC, and these guys populated and they fortified the city of Cardia, and he also founded a few other cities. His most famous construction was the Long Wall, which went from Cardia to another city called Pactae. It's about 7.2 kilometers long. It was completed relatively early, his reign in that area, so could be around now, you know, definitely prior to the 546. And it was designed to keep the one group out of their peninsula, so like we said, there was all these battles happening. He did go to war against a city called Lampascus, and the war was unsuccessful. And he was actually taken captive briefly during an ambush. And this is interesting. He was released because of the intercession of Croesus, So maybe he bribed him to get them out. Obviously, he had something to do with the. He must have had something to do with the Oracle, because the people came back from the Oracle and met this guy.
Croesus loves the Oracle.
Croesus loves the Oracle. Isn't that crazy how all these guys are all connected, though?
It's a small place.
Right? I mean, it's just like, you know, like Croesus knows this guy from here, and then this guy's starting a thing, and Pisistratus is getting his business going. All right. One more place here in Greece. We have Sparta.
Oh, my favorite Greek city.
Your favorite is Sparta. I don't know. Maybe I'd be like the Athens and you'll be Sparta when we do this stuff.
Oh, yes. All right. Well, I did those episodes about Spartan life long ago.
Yeah.
In the podcast.
They are intense, as you know, the Spartans. Very, very intense. They must think the people of Athens are just crazy. Like, what are you doing? Well, it's nuts. You just do what we say.
I have to repeat the quote from... the Athenian exile in Sparta. And that is from this time, I think, or a bit later, when he has lived among the Spartans for just a few days, I think. He's like, Now I know why the Spartans don't fear death. They are already in hell. Sparta is a very egalitarian society where nobody gets anything good.
Right. That's if you're a Spartan, and if you're a Helot, you got a even worse.
Yes.
Terrible. So, okay, let's go to Sparta. Sparta is to the south of Athens, and the Peloponnese, it's called. If you look on the map, you can see where it is. Fortunately, this is a podcast. I can't show it, point it out to you. But it's to the south of Athens. And as we saw, Athens is growing, so they're sort of like growing their territory around them. Since Sparta wants to do the same thing. We may have talked about this, but I'm going to put it together again here in this episode again anyway. So if you go north from Sparta, there's, you know, olive fields and groves. There's this territory called Tegea, and it lies between Argos and Sparta. And I'm pretty sure we talked about it, but I'll bring it up again. Tegea had a really good farmland, which to Sparta was like, oh, yeah, let's seize that business and turn those guys into helots too. If you remember, what happened was... they went to the Oracle, and they told them that they would soon be dancing upon the plain of Tegea. So they went. When they went to fight the battle, they brought surveying equipment and fetters for their new serfs. But the Oracle had fooled them, or, you know, obviously confused them, because the invasion was defeated, and the only dancing that was done was by the Spartans beneath a whip, toiling as prisoners of war, shackled by the chains they themselves brought from Sparta. So how about that? Unexpected. So this really, like, was a blow to the Spartan self-confidence, and they changed their foreign policy. It kind of, like, dawned on them that the goal of reducing all the Peloponnese into helots was probably too ambitious. But they could still be, like, the hegemons in a different way. There's no question they had to deal with Tegea. They had to bring them to heel somehow. So maybe they could do something different. So what they did was they dispatched the delegation to Tegea under the cover of a truce. And they said that news reached them of a strange find in a blacksmith's yard. It was the spine of what appeared to be a monstrous skeleton. And the Spartans, to make a propaganda coup, they took on this startling discovery for themselves. They dug up the bones, smuggled it home, and then reinterred them. And then the skeleton, it was revealed, had belonged to none other than Agamemnon's son. So this was one of the ancestors of the Tegeans. So these bones were supposedly from Agamemnon's son. And I don't know if you know about, like, these, why they would think these bones were giant bones. They would find, like, mammoth bones and dinosaur bones, and they didn't know what there was dinosaurs and mammoths and stuff like that. They just say they were giants. This is where the legends of giants come in, by the way. Yeah. And I'm not just asking questions. I'm answering them. They're dinosaur bones and mammoth bones and et cetera. So in the Argives, that area, the Argives, is like, that's one of their ancestors. So now this was, you know, couldn't, like, more infuriated them. the aim was by putting them in theirs, the Spartans enshrining them basically in their own soil was like offering a public reassurance to others in the Peloponnese that she valued and respected all their ancient traditions. And she's still Sparta. In other words, you want to go to the war to the death with Sparta? Let's do it. But Sparta also doesn't want to go to the war. Go to war to the death. So like she had done it, instead of doing what they did in Messina and turning everyone into helots, cities that would show that they would fight to the death like that, they could now submit to Sparta without a fear of total ruin. So, and then the Spartans even said it will bring them some perks. You know, there's a long history of rivals and wars and Argos and fighting against all these other places. So Sparta offered them a protection racket, basically. You know, we're not going to make you helots, but you're kind of like vassals. So it was like a vassalage.
Argos and Sparta are like the two Dorian brothers.
Yeah.
They came to Greece together long ago, and they formed two Dorian cities, and they can't ever get along.
Ever. And the Dorians are kind of more warlike, I guess, but that would be sort of people to say anyway.
It was 700 years ago, but they are still going.
Yeah, someday I would like to maybe parse that out or maybe get an expert into a special episode of the... Because we got to realize that this... We don't talk about it every time we talk about Greece and stuff, but that those tensions of the Ionians, the Dorians, and the Achaeans is always present in Greece.
Yes.
And they even speak a little different dialect. They're all Greeks, but it's different. It's kind of like maybe sort of like the British, the French, and the Germans, something like that, you know?
Yeah, and they're united by their common culture now, but there's still some of the invading Dorian culture left.
Correct. So yeah, so here at 550 now, after they call that the Battle of the Chains, the one that they brought the chains, so Tegea entered into a league. So there's a league now, and it's established and controlled by Sparta. And other cities like Tegea, there were wooed and reassured into submission. But the Spartan bone hunters were like going all over the Peloponnese looking for bones and heroes and doing all this, you know, business. You know, they show that they're going to be guardians of the mythic past, but they're also still true to their ideals as the wolf pack. They, you know, they practice terror and total war. You know how the Spartans fought it these days? How drilled their phalanx was? Do you want to hear a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we know that there was Spartans were tough 100 years ago, but the phalanx was really like over the last 100 years really was really honed down into what it is now. By now, you know, the Greek phalanx is a thing, a really tough thing. Most of the other cities, though, they were still kind of like amateurs, you know, like imagine like amateur boxers and pro boxers. The Spartans are like the pros. They're like mercenaries. They're like the Wagner group, you know, they're like the tough guy. They're like really, they're not doing this for just fun. This is their thing.
Yeah, the big difference is that the Spartans are full-time warriors as they got other people to do their manual labor, whereas
exactly
all other people are not.
Exactly. They're the ones doing the labor, and they just put their, you know, they pull out their spear and their helmets and stuff.
And it mainly manifests in discipline and physical fitness.
100%. And that's important. And I mean, physical fitness, of course, but the discipline too is so important in war, which is actually what I was going to say, because they would, you know, even just psychological warfare, they would turn their enemy's blood to ice, they would say, you know, from far off, the phalanx would be, there'd be shrilling, high-pitched pipes. They would have like a rhythmic boom, 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 slow approach, you know, kind of like you see in the movies. And they would come through the dust, and then you would see this dazzling wall of bronze and scarlet, you know, these bronze armor, scarlet capes, long hair. They would burn it. Their shields would be glittering, right? And their scarlet's like the color of blood. They're slow marching and their battle hymns coming. Then they would yell out a command and it would be silent, just silent. And then trumpets. And then the hoplites would just quicken their pace, lower their spears, and then start to run at you. Now you're an amateur, like you maybe not even in a war before. Maybe you were, but you're like, look at these bastards. And then even not necessarily in a single mass. The wings might come separately, like a bullhorns, you know, just to turn your flanks. And you know that took discipline. If you were on the other side, you're like, we can't march like that. Like they say the other hoplites in other cities seemed like cheating, But everyone agreed it's a terrible thing to fight the Spartans.
I was amazed when I did the Spartans episodes when I read about their training that they don't train much fighting. You don't train like you imagine a warrior would train to individually be skilled. But that's not what they train. It's only physical fitness and discipline.
Oh.
So they can maintain the phalanx. They can last longer than their enemies.
That makes sense. I mean, there's probably at some point there's when you're just standing there with a spear and making your moves right, it's probably you're more of a tool yourself than actually, you know, an individual.
Yeah, and these phalanx battles are always settled by one phalanx breaking.
Right.
So if you make everything you can to ensure that your phalanx doesn't break, you will probably win.
Yeah, and if you're stronger and right, and if you're physical fit, you're physically fit because just like boxing, I mean, you could be a great puncher. I watched, I was boxing the other night, and this, I watched the young kids, you know, spar. And this one guy's been coming for a while. He's like in great shape and everything. He looks like he's in great shape, but I never saw him spar. And then I was watching them. I turned my head for a minute and he was done. He took one shot in the stomach. He's like, I'm gassed. You know, like you really, you have to be in shape to be able to handle something like that.
You see that in MMA all the time as well.
For sure. I mean, and those guys are all in pretty good shape, obviously, you know. But if you take just a regular person versus someone who trains all the time, that's a huge difference.
Yes.
So, yeah. So this Athens, remember I said we said the East versus West is Sparta is shaping up. But we also have Athens versus Sparta shaping up. And to me, I don't think they could be more different. Like, Athens is kind of ruled by the rabble. And Sparta is literally enslaves the rabble, you know.
But in the end, it will be those two cities standing up to the Persian threat.
Yeah, and then let's see what happens after that. So I wrote here in the notes, I'm going to say, I just said, what a fucking story this is. You know, this is why we like history. This is a great fucking story. I mean, you have like a democracy versus an oligarchy with a huge like empire to the east, like building up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the video game because now, so Athens is like, We choose democracy, you know, and Sparta's like, we choose oligarchy, and Persia's like, we choose monarchy. And Athens is growing their population and their economy. Sparta's growing their population by, not their own population, but the amount of troops they could garnish by, you know, having these vassals. And it's happening other places, too. It's sort of a, let's have a little transition, because the Greek colony of Cyrene in Libya is also sort of spreading out. It's they founded a colony called Barca, which is this whole area, Cyrenica. It's like five different cities. So this is just another one of their cities and just becomes a bigger area, more powerful and wealthy. And at the same, we're going to talk a little bit about Carthage, but at the same time, Carthage is also expanding locally, you know, growing their actual area around them. They're not sending out more colonists. And that's where we are with that. All right, so that's the big story. Just a little housekeeping on Greece and this area for Greece. Sometime around 550, the Greeks founded a colony near the Sea of Azov, which used to be called, in those days, Lake Maeotis. It was possibly founded by another Greek colony in the area. And this basically technically ends the Age of Greek colonization. 550 BC is the end of Greek colonization, which, like I said, it's like the colonies are done. So this colony was founded by another colony. And I was going to bed the other night, and I just had this thought. We have Greek democracy sort of starting now. You know, really, we have the birth of Greek democracy. And the Greeks have all these colonies in that, which is like Ukraine, the Sea of Azov over there, which is the steppes, which is the Scythians and other kind of tribal people are there. And tribal people are usually somewhat egalitarian. You know, they have the rights of man, that kind of stuff. Not, they don't call it that. And they're obviously, you know, they'll split your head open with an axe too. But it was it just reminded me, it's similar to what happened when the Europeans came to the Americas. It's shown that, you know, we don't have talk of like the rights of man and constitutions and things like that until European thinkers start talking to some of the Indian thinkers. You think there's not Indian thinkers, but there were American Indians, I mean, You know, they had a totally different way of life than the Europeans. And you sort of see this sort of changing in, you know, the 1500s AD. So I just wonder if that influence didn't influence Greek democracy. And that's all I have to say about that.
All right.
So that is it for Greece.
Well, that's it for Greece. And we'll move on to a little more things from the 550s before we return for the 540s. And in the 540s, we will also have Rome back again.
Oh, good.
Because I couldn't find anything new for Servius Tullius.
Okay, good. Well, we need it. We need.
But in the 540s, I will find something.
Okay. Well, and there, in the 540s, you're going to. There's a lot of stuff going on between the Greeks and the Carthaginians. There's a lot of stuff going on in Carthage in the 540s, too. So what we have, I mean, there is stuff happening, though.
And then there is the Cyrus thing happening.
Oh, well. Nah, of course, there's a lot of stuff happening with Cyrus.
And Confucius. But now let's get on with the 550s.
All right. Well, listen, guys. I mentioned Gil's podcast, so check that out. Please check out our Facebook page and our Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. A couple bucks an episode would be great. You could check out Dan's Instagram page. And you have a Facebook page too, right?
No, I don't.
Just Instagram.
I've left Facebook entirely.
Entirely. Okay.
Yeah.
My 15-year-old daughter is like looking at it like it was like a funny thing. She's no idea. She's like, look at this stuff. People pick pictures of their kids up there. So she goes up, right? And she looks at her friends when they're baby pictures. It's hysterical.
Yeah, it's ancient now.
It's ancient history. Sell your stock. All right. Well, thanks, guys. And thanks, Dan. We will catch you next time on Fan of History. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.